Hello and welcome to the Green Room at Furnitubes. I'm your host, Catherine Barrett, and we're here every month with a new episode. Join us for industry musings, interviews, and discussions exploring all things landscape architecture, street furniture, and urban design. Hi, and welcome to the Green Room. In this series of A View From Here, we're joined today by Mariana Marquez, a landscape architect at Deakin Design, based in Wickham, Hampshire. Hi, Mariana, how are you?
Hi, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good, yeah. So what we wanted to do today for this podcast was really just understand a bit about your journey, why landscape architect, and what does good landscape architecture mean to you? So, I mean, if you could start, you've got a great, interesting background, and it'd be really good to learn a little bit about you and your journey so far.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Yeah, so my name is Mariana Marquez. As I said, I'm an associate landscape architect at Deakin Design. I studied back in Portugal, where I'm from. I did my bachelor's degree in Évora's University and then the master's degree in Porto. Once I finished my master's, because of jobs, opportunities, and really I wanted to invest in my career, I decided to move to England, and I've been working at Deakin Design since then, so it's almost 6 years now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, so obviously since my studies and then working in the UK, I've also did the pathway to chartership, and I finished that in November 2021. I think I would say it was a key and fundamental thing for me to do. You gain a lot of knowledge and really confidence to give the best advice to the clients and, you know, just to become a better professional, I would say. You know, you learn all the values of the Landscape Institute as well as the objectives, and you really apply those on a professional, you know, daily basis. Also, as part of the pathway to chartership, if you don't know, you also have a mentor, which is another fundamental thing, I would say, because having a mentor is really key, because then that person is really there to guide you through the journey and to sort of help you navigate the syllabus. And it is really important to have their knowledge also. For instance, if you're not exposed to a particular subject at your work, they can always sort of share their knowledge and their experience, and then you'll be like familiar with that sort of parts of the syllabus. I would say that's in the glimpse what my background is.
Yeah, so having the Landscape Institute chartership, but also the mentor. And is that person assigned to you or you found?
I mean, fortunately for me, it was someone in the company, because, you know, you have like weekly meetings, monthly meetings and things like that. But I think there is actually a group, and you can have like a mentor from another part of the world almost, as long as they're like a chartered member and they are like a mentor as part of the LI. You can then support and just being a mentor.
And I'm sure you'll look to pay it forward at some point by mentoring new candidates as well.
Yeah, I would not say now.
No.
But that's definitely something I would like to. In a way, it keeps you up to date. Because you are passing the knowledge. And for you to do that, I'll be like, oh, okay, let me check the last guidance.
And you've got to be able to explain it and know.
Yes, yeah. No, I think it's a great thing to, you know, just for your professional development, I would definitely recommend.
And fosters a really great sense of community. If you've got a structure where you have mentors as part of the chartership, then you have a profession that is always thinking about how you bring the next generation up.
Yeah, and it's really so you don't feel alone and have like all that to learn. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. So then why landscape architecture? What's taken you on this path of landscape architecture?
Right, so I'm going to be honest. I wanted to be an architect at the beginning, but at the time, I could only apply to landscape architecture to get in the course. And the idea was, in my mind, was like, okay, I'll go to landscape architecture, but then I'll transfer to architecture. Silly me, because quite early on the course, I understood that landscape architecture was a better fit for me, because I was actually mixing the art element and the science natural elements, whilst also improving people's well-being. So I was like, at the beginning, I was like, okay, no, this is it, you're not moving.
But it's interesting because I think we were talking earlier about the need for more landscape architects, because the profession's just, certainly in the UK, has rightfully hit depreciation,
a boom.
But it feels like, you know, 16, 17, 18 year olds know architecture, but we need them to know about landscape architecture as well, so they are able to make that decision earlier on. We're lucky that you discovered it while you were there, but it'd be great for more people who think they want to do architecture or love geography, natural sciences, art, engineering, and it's this brilliant profession that kind of combines all of that in one place.
I mean, the Landscape Institute, besides the institute itself, it's great at promoting the profession, really. And I think it was a few years ago they came up with the hashtag Choose Landscape, and it was really much up to that, you know, just to spread the word, make ourselves known, and what do we do in things like quite key points on two key questions, just so it'd be easier to whoever is applying and be like, oh, okay, I want to go down that route.
So then what does good landscape architecture mean to you?
Well, besides the mix of the art and the natural elements, when I'm designing, I think it is crucial to design spaces for people to really think how they will use the spaces in a way. And I think it's also, for a good landscape architecture, it's also really important, the coordination side of things, and to really have a sort of a multidisciplinary approach, because I feel like sometimes it's really discussing around the table with the other consultants that we come up and overcome some issues that might come, you know, site challenges, for instance. And essentially is designing the solutions that are functional, focus on the user, and also be quite mindful of the natural environment and the character of the landscape. So yeah, that for me is what is good landscape architecture, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. So it's for people, but with a wonderful toolbox in terms of how you can do that.
Yeah, it's mixing the cool designs but and the function, you know, just trying to apply the art and the science, like natural elements in the same, yeah.
What's your process and your approach when you're looking at a project or a scheme? How do you approach it?
So I would say, for instance, on a new site, my process is very much understanding the character of the site. From the beginning in Evro, we've learned the genus loci, which is a Latin term. I think you guys pronounce it genus loci or something like that, but it's genus loci is how we say it. And that term translates literally for the spirits of a place. So it's a good analysis of the site, almost like a baseline study. And then, you know, I look at it, trying to identify any opportunities and constraints. That's normally done in a nice plan. So then you can talk it through the client based on the current site. And then, you know, you start working up the design. I would say that that's sort of my approach.
And is there, in terms of engaging with the people who'll be using the site, does that sometimes come into play, or will there be interviews? So is that part of understanding the spirit of a place, is also the people who are, will be using it or could be using it, or the types of people? Because I know you work with a lot of care homes. Would that be part of understanding the spirit of the place?
Well, on the care homes, we do the design, you know, always thinking about the resident who is going to use the site. We do feed that into the design, pretty much the knowledge that the client share with us, and also the care home managers, you know, they're pretty much the ones that spend all day there with the residents. And we're like, oh, actually, on the next care home, can we have these and can we have that? So that's how we develop.
And do you go back to the care homes to see how they're being used? And are you surprised sometimes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. In the good and in the bad. Yeah. I would say review the projects after completion. It is a must. You know, a good review, almost coming up with a list of do's and don'ts in a way. It's always so you can know what to improve next time. Invariably, you will have the situations that was outside of your control. For instance, if it was a design and build, you wouldn't have the control in all the situations. But, you know, nonetheless, it's always good to revisit the project. And actually, I keep banging on that point, but just to see how people use it, it's quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah. And so what, for you, have been some of your most memorable learnings in the last 5 years?
Well, just certainly the one that I said now, you know, is quite important once have completed the project. go there and have quite, you know, a good look to what you've done, take pictures to everything. There is always the fact that I go to site and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot that corner. I really wanted to see what that would look like. But, you know, just record it, take notes, just for your knowledge, not just to share with the client what went wrong and good. Another learning point probably in this profession, a key element is coordination. So because we need to be mindful of so many colleague constraints from the other consultants, any elements that we need to work on, for instance, drainage, services, utilities, buildings, foundations, etc. By the time you have all those layers overlaid, we need to work up the proposals depending on that. So that is another learning, probably the whole coordination, how to make it work. The majority of the time, there is definitely, depending on the design team, but there is definitely opportunity to discuss ways to improve the scheme. But yeah, it's always really important to share ideas. Oh, could we move that pipe there so we can have the tree here in a way?
Because you're also working with different teams each time, right? So you're not going to get the same engineer or the same group of people.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then it's like learning new ways. But the communication is a key point, you know. Now we have most of online, you know, meetings, but it works greatly. It works the same way, because we are all trying to have the same goal, isn't it? A good scheme, a bit of a flexibility. Probably another learning point, and I would say it's something that Phil taught me since the beginning. Phil, he's the director at Deakin Design. It is pretty much just to take almost every opportunity to educate the client. It could be a simple introducing a new product, a seating and why, a new raised planter, or any new design solution. So yeah, I would say that is also important, something that I try to apply every day.
So then what are the two projects then that you feel you've had the most impact on and you most proud of in your career?
Well, because you just said proud, I'll definitely talk about care homes then. I've been involved in a lot of care home projects, and I can't pinpoint one project exactly, but we have these clients who I managed to go quite a good relationship with since I joined the company, and it is something I became quite passionate about. That's why I'm like, okay, let's talk about this one, probably because it's a small scale project in a way, and you really go into the detail of how much, you know, almost like each planting setting out like garden design in a way.
Yes. You've got the layers.
Yeah, you try to, okay, what would I do if I was there? How do you want like the plants to be, grasses and things like that? It's what I became passionate about. And the other thing is also to design the spaces, thinking about the residents. And most of the care homes we design is for residents with dementia. So there is so many little things that we need to be mindful of, which I wasn't aware of before. So that's been quite good to be involved with. I would say, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of guidance on the external spaces in a care home.
You mean sort of statutory guidance?
Yeah, definitely statutory guidance. But even if you compare the external spaces on a care home compared with the amount of articles, you know, publications or even certain talks around the interior design.
Yes, in terms of furnishings and
materials. Colors to use. Textures, paving not with the gloss finish, things like that, that they go into so much detail on the interior. Unfortunately, they don't have the same sort of guidance for the exterior. It's like what I suggested earlier, the design of the care home is very much a collaboration with ourselves and the client and or the care home manager. So we do use that feedback to then feed into our care home gardens.
So your knowledge is growing and improving with each project.
Yeah, I can also talk about another project which I've just been recently involved. It's been in the company for a bit longer. It's a totally different scale.
Right.
If we look at a care home, this one is like 2,500 homes with local center, primary school, you know, sports fields and things like that. So it is a strategic residential scheme called One Horton Heath. I mean, we are currently focused on delivering just the infrastructure, but we will soon be working on the residential parcel. So it has been quite a good transition between looking at such a small detail and now working in quite a strategic site. Yeah.
and sort of zooming out, I guess. But will there be the opportunity to kind of go through the stages to get to more detailed elements? Or just because it's so big, then that's not going to be as likely?
No, we are going to be involved in those stages, so it's going to be quite nice to start like zooming into the detail. Yeah, no, it's been quite fascinating being involved on that scheme, yeah.
Yeah. Just going back to the care homes, I think one of the other pieces for me with care homes is, I mean, really the impact that outdoor space, we've seen it with hospitals as well, but the impact on residents that having a really lovely, just even a small outdoor space has. It's great that so much thought and care goes into it to make sure it's as comfortable and as warming as possible for them.
Yeah, for sure. It is what I like a lot. It's just the whole, you know, small detail, and it's quite something you wouldn't think of. The manholes shouldn't be black, the cover, just so someone with dementia could think that's like sort of a black hole, you know? So it's things like that, and our client is quite careful with that. So, and try not to have those in the soft as well, so the planting is maximized. If we have them in the footpaths with a recessed cover, so that means the block paving will be on top, we won't see them. It won't be a confusing element for a resident with dementia. Things like having no dead ends as well, because sometimes people get confused. So if we do have that situation, we have a seating at the end, or like a, you know, just exactly. Now it became such a normal thing for me to design. But before I was like, oh, wow, I need to think about these. And wow, people will, you know, it was like mind blowing when I was like learning about these things.
Thinking in a different way, or putting your head in a different head.
For sure. Yeah. No.
So we learned that you're from Portugal, and that's where you did your education and your initial training happened. So, and you mentioned the move to the UK because of opportunities. So where is Portugal in terms of landscape architecture?
Well, hopefully it's a bright future. This is very much based on my experience and what I experienced when I was there, when I finished uni, and comparing what I know from here. So hopefully things have improved. But I think there is still a lot to learn, I would say. I mean, we could start in the whole foundation, let's call it. There isn't a institute. It's more like an association unit type of things. Comparing with architects have an institute. And even in the local authority system, you know, the landscape architecture department, they don't always have a landscape architecture department in local authorities, or operates quite differently from what's here. And there is still a lack of, you know, the general public knowing what we do in a way and what the profession is. So they didn't really appreciate the importance of having a landscape architect involved on a project. It was very much architect. And yes, I can put a tree in the back garden in a way.
So it would be more the, not quite the level of appreciation that we now fortunately have here on outdoor space rather than the profession itself. It's kind of the building is first and then there's outdoor space.
Yeah, yes. I mean, more and more we can see that here they want it to be like a landscape-led approach, which is fantastic, isn't it? And we need to be involved almost from day one. And over there, it was still, oh, yeah, landscape architects, you do the roundabouts in a way, you know? So, and maybe it's the whole, you know, spreading the word, promoting the profession, universities doing a bit more. Maybe it's a bit of everything, and just being recognized from the government as well. You know, the Landscape Institute has a voice on so many things over here. So it's just like,
has to be elevated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've come to the end of our conversation, but we have a couple of questions that we love to ask guests when they come in. So the first question, what is one thing that you feel landscape architects and the landscape architect profession can do right now to help combat the climate disaster?
Well, I would say certainly it could start with the small things. You know, you could start using products that come from sustainable materials. You could look at finding local products, and what I mean by that is nearby suppliers, you know, be mindful about the whole factory site distance. So those are little things, but in the grand scheme make a lot of difference. try to retain existing landscape and habitats as much as we can in a sympathetic way, and also be super mindful to design resilient landscapes. It's becoming so common now, but even just the species selection, you know, is it disease and drought tolerant? Include suds and then any other things to fight any flooding problems. Interestingly, I was, like I told you before, I attended a CPD that the ally just did at this lunchtime. It was called Biodiversity Net Gain, and Dr. Gemma Jerome, it was just explaining the whole climate emergency and ecology emergency being two sides of the same coin. So in a way, if you fight one, you're fighting the other. So yeah, it's just pretty much finding ways to design resilient landscapes, really.
And then our last question is, if you could put a bench anywhere in the world, where would you put it and why?
I would say, and will be a dreaming answer, near the Arctic, just so I can have a resting point whilst I watch the Northern Lights. I haven't watched them yet.
No, that's one of my something. Bucket lists, yes.
Oh, see, same. I was about to say that. So, you know, I need a bench there.
Amazing. That is probably one. I can see it. I can see the view. It's gorgeous. Well, I hope you get to see the Northern Lights and find a bench to watch them from.
Thank you.